Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and as always, former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. This week we'll hear exclusively from England Test captain Ben Stokes as he reflects on his first few months in the role and looks ahead to next week's three-match Test series against South Africa. Stuart Broad discusses Ollie Robinson's return to the Test squad, and we catch up with England's World Cup winning captain Owen Morgan. Hugh Turbeville, editor of the Cricketer magazine, joins us to discuss Richard Thompson's appointment as the new ECB chair, and England captain Nat Siver talks about cricket at the Olympics after Team England missed out on a medal at the Commonwealth Games. So plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. OK, Homie, let's start with the England squad. Ollie Robinson is the one addition, so no surprises. We weren't expecting any surprises. And it's from a bowling point of view, it looks like it's all down to Jimmy and Broady once again.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. We've had so many selection panels, so many coaches, so many backroom staff try to finish Jimmy and Broady off. If it wasn't for the two of them this year, we would have been in some place. I've got no idea what England would have done if Broad and Anderson had retired at the end of last season, because we have to keep going back to them. And why? Because they're bowling fit. They are bowling fit. And, you know, I sound like an old broken record again, time after time after time, talking about bowlers not bowling enough to keep fit. Well, we've just seen Broad and Anderson, they were at a 100 game last week commentating on it. And then 2 hours before the game, they're bowling to a net, basically, on the nursery ground at Hampshire, just to keep their bowling volume up, because they know what it takes to get better and be the bowlers that they need to be for Test match standard. And unfortunately, some of our younger bowlers think bowling four overs and a hit and giggle is going to be enough to get me ready for a Test match, and then the breakdown, and can't understand that.
How often did you do that? That video is amazing of the two of them, just bowling, as you said, at a set of stumps in a net. How often did you do that? Did you ever find yourself preparing by yourself bowling at an empty net?
Yeah, quite a bit. At Ashington, I used to do it all the time, because I live 45 minutes away from Chesley Street. And if there was a game on that I wasn't allowed to play in, because there was quite a few games that I wasn't allowed to play in from Duncan. To be fair, you know, when the central contracts were around then, you were all playing, or none of you were playing. And there were a few of my former colleagues who quite like going off on holiday or playing in golfing trips in between Test matches. So, you know, some of us that asked to play couldn't play. So you had to improvise, and living so far away from Chester Street, I didn't see the point of driving all the way through to get 20-minute bowling. So I used to just go to Ashing Cricket Club, stick the net on the side and bowl on one of the pitches that had been used at the weekend. And you had to. That was something you just had to do. And that's why Broad and Anderson have stayed durable for so long. And I think a mess. And this is probably why Ollie Robinson's been picked in the two squads. So they don't want him to play the 100. I think the lifestyle that goes with playing in the 100 is a lot of travel. Social side is, I think, quite nice. And I think the volume of cricket when it comes to preparation and then in game time is not a great deal. So I think the selection panel at the ECB have done a really good thing by putting them in the England squads, so they can manage what he does and how he goes about. This boy's got so much talent. He really has. But unfortunately, he's got to be durable to bowl 25 overs at the same speed, because he hasn't got any pace. His skill levels are through the roof. really high skill level. His accuracy is very, very good. Challenges the inside and outside of batsmen's inside and outside edge of the bat from a good height, and he bowls that fuller length. So there's no issues with his skill level. It's just his durability and his ability to perform for a long period, and that's something I think England will want to manage and hopefully get up to speed, ready for whenever he's required. But I don't think he'll play in the first test.
OK, let's hear from Stuart Broad. He was talking about Ollie Robinson, amongst other things, a little earlier this week.
I watched him at his first game back at Trent Bridge last week. He's an incredible bowler. He's got all the attributes you'd want. He's just struggled a little bit with his fitness, and I think, his back's been... He's been sort of having back spasms at the start of game and stuff. But there is such a leap from first-class cricket to test cricket, and the intensity, the expectation... you've got to come back for your third spell with the same drive and pace as you did with your first. And it's just it can take different people different time to be able to react to that and adjust to that. But he's got every attribute you'd want in a fast bowler for test match cricket. As you can see, his record after 8 tests is absolutely sublime. So his next move is making sure that he's basically available to bowl, because if you're not available to be on the park, you're not going to take wickets. But he has all the ability to be able to win test matches for England.
Skipper on tomorrow. We've got Ben Stokes on tomorrow, and life must be exciting at the moment with him and Brendan McCullum. I was reading one thing. They're saying no longer do we have the night watchman in baseball. You're the night hawk, Stuart. You come in there and have a bit of a thrash hawk about. You know, it's a different discipline now.
It sort of started. It's sort of completely made up, to be honest. But it sort of started at Trent Bridge. I was sat there. You know, Joe Root, great 100. Ollie Pope, great 100. And Baz came to me in the change room, just made myself a nice coffee, and he went, Brody, get your pads on. So I'm like, what? He's like, I want you to go in next. So again, I reacted with amazing surprise. And he said, I feel like the crowd, it's my home ground at Nottingham, he said, I feel like the crowd are just a bit quiet. I want you to go out and try and hit your first ball for 4. Wow. And then if you get out after that, I don't mind, because you've given the crowd a lift. And that was just an insight
Fantastic.
Into his mentality, you know? So where the Nighthawk came from, we're at Edgbaston, and normally have a night watchman with 20 minutes to go to protect the next sort of quality batter. And he came to me with 40 minutes to go in the chase. You know, we needed another 300 or 270. And he said, do you fancy going? So I was like, I'll go for it, coach. You know, I'll try and impress you. And he said, basically, try and whack me 20. Try and knock 20 off the scoreboard as quickly as you can. And he said, attack the enemy when they're sleeping. Which is where the Nighthawk came from. So I got my pads on with the only aim to try and whack it for 20 minutes. And if I got out, it was fine. And I think he's had an amazing ability to take pressure off players. So you see the likes of Johnny Bairstow has just come out and actually sort of said, look, if you get caught on the boundary, I prefer that to getting caught at slip.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that the sort of talent of the likes of Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow can then go and implement what they've got in the locker with their minds so free. So it's been an incredible start to the test match summer with the 4 test wins, and you know, it's our job to entertain and do it again for August. Nice. But I think, you know, it's been an amazing turnaround, hasn't it, with the mentality of the test match team. And it's been really deliberate. It's been really deliberately positive. It's been all the messaging, all the language in the changing room from Stokesy and Baz has been incredible in how forward thinking and how you take the game forward. I basically try and take the draw out of the game completely. We want to win at all costs, and if we lose trying to win, that's fine. You know, so I'd be interested to sort of pick his brain on how he came up, and him and Baz came up with changing that mentality so quickly and just making sure that they're speaking that language all the time.
Stuart Broad speaking to Paul Hawksby and Charlie Baker on Talk Sport. A couple of other questions for you. Zach Crawley, his first class career average has now dropped below 30. His last innings against India was a very, very good one, but is there still a spotlight being shone on his place, his inclusion?
Absolutely. There's no sugarcoating that. He is under pressure. He's probably the one, the biggest one in that group that is under the most pressure. And when things don't go, when things aren't going for you, it tends to highlight, little minor mistakes or little rub of the green that you don't get, and that magnifies it. So Zach knows he's under pressure. He can't hide away from that. And especially with, you look at the Lions team, there's a lot of talk of Jennings, Sibley, Duckett. Duckett's just got come off the back of a big double hundred. So there is pressure out there, but I think McCollum and Stokes back Zach Crawley, his ability, and they feel as though because he's got so much potential, they want to give him every chance they possibly can to before they have to move on and look elsewhere. So the Lions, Zach Crawley doesn't need Dom Sibley, Keaton Jennings or Ben Duckett to go and get a big 100 against South Africa. But if they do, that might not be a bad thing for Zach going into the first test because he knows he's playing. And sometimes when players are under pressure, they come out and they perform. And Zach's got, I think he's the one that's got to do that.
There's a lot of interest, actually, in the Lions team. There's probably more interest in the performances of them than of the England team because they're obviously very settled. Harry Brook, Craig Overton, Dan Lawrence, all got a point to prove. Ollie Robinson's got to come through that as well. Sam Billings will captain the team. And Will Jacks, he's another very, very exciting talent. So I tell you what, it's a good-looking team.
It is. I like the top four, the top five probably will be Jennings, Sibley, Duckett, Brook, then Lawrence. It's an international five. I think England would, if had loads and loads of injuries, would have these in their group. I think if they picked an 18-man squad to go away in the winter, two or possibly three of them will out of that five will be in that 18-man squad to go to either Pakistan or to New Zealand. So it's a strong unit. Billings has played Test cricket this year. I'm intrigued and interested to see how Patterson White goes. A lot of talk about spin and whether the Lions go with a Connors or a Sam Cook probably to back up. I would imagine Craig Overton will play and Ollie Robinson will play. So from that there, the balance, like you say, Jacks, will he bat six possibly? And you think that's not a bad side that to go against South Africa. So South Africa will be pleased. I think Mark Boucher will be really pleased at that side because he knows he's not playing like Leicester's second team or Derbyshire's third team. He's playing against a very good side the week before a test match. So I think it's a win-win for everybody concerned in the game down at Canterbury, I think it is.
It is. It was very interesting to me that the South African test specialists only arrived in Canterbury on Sunday. I thought that many of them would have been, I don't know, come over a little bit earlier and played some club cricket, but they've all got together on Sunday for the game, the four-day game, which starts on Tuesday. This is Mark Boucher talking about South Africa's chances in the test series.
We know the way that the England guys have been playing. I don't see them changing at all. There's no science to it. I think that you've got to be quite artistic in the way that you go about things, see the conditions and sort of adapt accordingly. So, you know, we believe that we've got a strong test setup, especially our bowling attack. If our batters can get some good time in the middle in the next couple of days and get into some good form, I think it's going to stand us in good stead with the test matches going forward. I think it should be a good test series as well. We've got some good momentum going into the test series, which I think is important, and the confidence is definitely there in the dressing room at the moment.
Mark Boucher never gave much away as a player, and he doesn't as a coach. But I do think that there are a number of key battles, but the most key for me is Broad and Anderson against South Africa's top order, because Sara Lavia, the opening left-handed opener, obviously got Dean Algar, who's a very, very experienced campaigner and he's proven quality, but you've got Sara Lavia, who's played less than 10 test matches, as has Keegan Peterson at number three, probably going to have Rassie van der Dussen at four, and again the number five slot, Ryan Rickleton, inexperienced, very, very, very talented, but that to me is going to be the key. It's South Africa have the potential to be 50 for four.
Yeah, and I think that's what Broad and Anderson will be hoping for, that little bit of luck that goes their way, and I'm talking about luck going their way and when the conditions to bowl. So if cloud comes over, there is a little bit of movement, then all of a sudden Broad and Anderson will lick their lips, I think, at South Africa's sort of top three, top four. I would say, a huge amount of pressure on Dean Elgar to hold the whole thing together. But he's a fantastic performer. He's somebody who absorbs the game quite well. And he's very, very good at sort of putting fires out if Anderson and Broad got on a roll. He's seen a couple of times in South Africa. He did that. So it's going to be interesting to see the older guard go head to head. Keegan Peterson played a bit at Durham. I don't think he enjoyed his time over here. I think he had a real struggle. I think more to settle in, I think. But who would enjoy settling in the northeast of England sometimes when it's freezing cold? But I think he had a real struggle with being over here as the overseas player. But Ryan Rickleton's batted really well for Northampton. They've got some exciting players. It's just if England get the conditions that are favourable to the bowlers, then you'd back England to really put South Africa's top order under pressure.
And I just want to say that if South Africa have the potential to be 50 for four, so do England. Kagiso Rabada, Henrik Nortje, Marco Jansen, Lungi and Ngidi. I can see both teams being 50 for four very easily.
I'm talking about five-day test matches. If the bowlers get it in the right areas throughout this three test series, then yeah, you could be having a few days off.
Right, we'll look back at the A-team game, the Lions game, on next week's show, as well as building up to England's three-test series against South Africa, which starts on Wednesday. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. As promised, it's time now to hear from England Test captain Ben Stokes, who joined Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs over on TalkSport last week to reflect on his first few weeks in the role and look ahead to the test series against South Africa.
It's been an amazing start. You know, we've played some great cricket over these four test matches. We've got a big three games coming up here against South Africa. And if anything, I feel they're more important than these first four games, because those four games were so close together and they just sort of, you just rolled into the next game with the same energy and confidence. You know, now we've obviously had quite a big break in between the India test match and the South Africa games. It's really important that we almost take a step back and go back to how we finished off that block of test matches and continue that mindset, the attitude and everything that we've brought. And honestly, one of my main things and one of my major points to the team was, let's just go out there and have as much fun as we possibly can in as 11, because you're playing for England, you're representing your country, you're playing in front of thousands of live audience plus the people on the TV. You know, if you can't enjoy this moment, whatever's going on, I don't know, just take a step back and just enjoy it for what it is, and then the results will look after itself. Because, you know, if we play good cricket, we're going to win. If we don't play good cricket, we're going to lose. It's as simple as that. Let's just enjoy it.
Stuart was telling us yesterday, Ben, that the positivity in the dressing room that you and Brendan McCullum have instilled, he said, is very noticeable. And the mindset of the players when they go out to play currently for the test side. And he's been really taken by that. And I mean, he was sort of saying to us, he still doesn't quite know. Did you kind of sit down one day, you and Brendan McCullum, and say, OK, let's have a blueprint? Or did it just come out of your conversations? Or did you both come to it saying, this is what we both want to do, so your ideas matched?
No, I wouldn't say me and Brendan are people who get out a pen and paper and write down everything that goes on. You just sort of speak from the heart and go with, you know, sort of what your heart tells you. But I guess me and Brendan, we want to really install a winning mentality into everybody who comes and represents England. And that's whatever situation we find ourselves in, how can we do something that's going to help us win a test match? Whether that be, you know, bowling a team out in 40 overs on day five, or whether that be chasing 350 in 60 overs, you know, it's all about winning. Because for me personally, at this moment in time, I would much rather lose a test match trying to win the game than go the other way, if that makes sense. Because if you're trying to always win the game, you're installing that positivity and that mentality for everyone to try and be winners every time they step out there and try and take the positive step towards the game. And if you lose trying to do that, that's absolutely fine, because you're trying to be positive. And sport is, yes, it is about winning, but it's also about the style in which you want to be remembered of how you play. And I think what we've managed to do over these four games is almost just send the message to other teams who are going to play us, is that this is how they're going to play the cricket. They're going to have to think a hell of a lot more about their tactical decision-making over the 5 days. Because, you know, we've chased four totals now of, you know, very high totals. One at Trent Bridge, very, you know, an unbelievable chase set up by Johnny Bairstow. So yeah, I think teams sort of know what we're going to come up with, and it almost puts the ball in their court to make a decision about what they're going to do, especially if we're going to be chasing a total of the fourth inning.
Another one of Brendan's philosophies is to give players a decent go before writing them off, and something us in the media don't do, me particular, but it's true. But it's got to be good, that, because a player will go with confidence, won't they? If a player's thinking, if I don't make runs here, I'm out, or if I don't get a wicket, I'm out, you know, so it's probably a good philosophy, that.
Oh, honestly, I'm of the opinion that you give people time to perform, not put them under pressure to perform in a short amount of time to keep the place. You know, when we got back to the start of the summer and we picked the squad before the first test match was played, you know, we picked those players because we all thought they were the best players in the given positions. And, you know, we've got a summer of, you know, for 7 test matches in total. And 7 test matches is, you know, an opportunity for people to go out and perform. You know, if you're looking at, you know, maybe looking in another direction after 2 or 3 games, you know, what kind of message does that send to the next person who comes in for an opportunity? Straight away, that's putting pressure on that person to feel like they've got to go out and score runs, or someone else is going to get a look in. But I'm all about giving players time to perform, time to adapt to the new way of playing, because it is so different to what we've been used to. So you've got to allow them time to have the confidence and believe that they can go out and perform, but also perform in the way that me and Brendan want the team to play.
There's been a lot of talk as well, Ben, about the fact that at the moment it is going fantastically well and we are chasing down these mad totals. It's fantastic to watch. It's very entertaining. But there will be days when it doesn't work and we don't chase down the runs and we're out cheaply and we're quite gung-ho. I mean, I'm sure you and Brendan and the team are kind of prepared for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll take you back to Lords when we bowled out New Zealand cheaply on day one, and then we got bowled out cheaply in our second innings. And Brendan's first comment after that was, well, we said we were going to be entertaining, didn't we? So we've certainly done that. And, you know, so it's trying to turn those negative plays of cricket into a positive. And he's got an amazing way of being able to do that. And then another example was Headingley when we were 55-6. People were wondering what we're going to do. And me and Brendan both said, go out and put the pressure straight back onto them in this situation, because it can't get any worse. So, you know, and then Jamie and Johnny went out and played an unbelievable counter-attacking partnership. And we ended up getting a lead from 55-6. And that's purely because of the confidence that the lads get and are able to go out there with the bat in any situation. You know, it's all good and well going out and trying to whack it when you're 300-2. But, you know, can you do it 55-6? And we gave the lower order an opportunity to go out and do that. And you've seen how quickly the game turned around. You know, it's all about putting pressure back onto the team as much as you possibly can, but also understanding when you maybe need to soak up that pressure, but you're still doing it in a positive way.
And also, I think you've had great support from Joe Root. It can't have been easy losing the captaincy or giving up the captaincy, whichever way you want to put it, you know, and still performing on the field, but also noticeably right behind you.
Oh, you know what? When I took the job, he was the first person I called to say that I'm taking the captaincy on. And I also had a quick chat with him about, you know, the way that I want to lead the team forward, obviously overtaking from him. And I guess it shows the respect and the relationship that me and Joe have outside of cricket. You know, we're more than just colleagues. You know, I explained to him that all of my philosophies that are sort of, you know, the complete opposite of the spectrum to what you had is not a sign that I didn't believe in what you wanted to do, because whatever he did, I'd run through a brick wall for Joe. But to have a guy captain the England side for such a long period of time to buy into this new way of cricket is unbelievable, and it's a testament to himself as a person, let alone the player. We all know how good of a player Joe Root is, and to be honest, I didn't think a player of Joe could raise the ceiling or the standard of his batting any higher than he already has. But he's gone to another level in test match cricket now. It's unbelievable seeing the way that he's played. And he's got to take a lot of credit for going out and being brave enough to play in that way, considering he is and has been the rock of the English batting side for 5-6 years now. Because we know if Rooty does well, the team generally does well. But he's been brave enough to go out and play in the way that he's done. So, yeah, it's unbelievable.
You'll be aware of the fact that the way you guys are playing at the moment is being called Bazball. I mean, what do you make of that? What does the team? What does Baz make of it himself? Does he like? Is he quite chuffed?
No, he honestly does not like it. I don't know where it came from. I don't know who came up with that analogy, to be honest. But no, it's Fuzzball sounds like a knockoff version of baseball, doesn't it?
I think that's the idea. Right?
But it's no, I think it's just it was refreshing having someone like Brendan come in. You know, he's not too long off finishing playing cricket himself, and he's just such a relatable guy. He's so relaxed, laid back. He's always trying to push people in the right direction, and people just follow him. People listen to him, which sometimes is a very hard thing to do as a coach, is to get not just the 11 guys out there who are playing, but also the whole squad to really buy into what you're doing. And he's managed to do it. But Fuzzball, I'm not sure we would try and sign off on any copyright for that name.
Johnny Bairstow's decided to not play the 100. He wants a bit of a break physically and mentally, I think, before South Africa. It was something you were going to do before you stepped away from white ball cricket. I mean, the boys are going to make decisions based on their own feelings, their own fitness, the way they're feeling at the moment. What did you make of that?
Yeah, but look, I think you think of all the talk over the last couple of years about Test cricket dying, losing out to white ball cricket and franchise tournaments. There's people prioritising Test cricket now. You know, Johnny has chosen to take the 100 period as the time to have a break and a rest and just sort of get his energy back. And that's all because he knows that there's a Test cricket series around the corner. So the people who are saying that Test cricket's dying out, I don't think that's right, because you're looking at players now who are prioritising, you know, their schedule around Test matches. Ollie Robinson's another. He stepped away from the 100 as well to concentrate on his workload, to get his fitness up and bowl longer spells. Because obviously you're not able to do that on the 100. So you're seeing guys now come in and really look at the schedule and go, what do I need to do to make sure that I'm fit and firing to go for the Test matches when they come around? So I couldn't be happier as Test captain, and I also couldn't be happier as a huge Test, also almost ambassador, because it's the best format of the game. It's the pinnacle of cricket. You know, Test cricket will never die, and I hope it doesn't.
That was Ben Stokes speaking to Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs over on Talk Sport. A lot has been made over the years about Ben Stokes' courage as a cricketer. He's taking that courage behind the microphone as well. I mean, I think he's spoken more truths in his short time as England captain than many of his predecessors did in their careers.
Yeah, he's comfortable in speaking what he wants to speak, which is not normal for an England captain coming out of the ECB. I think it's safe to say that Ben and the ECB have had a checkered past, and that's not only putting it lightly, it's putting it as diplomatically as I possibly can do. Everybody knows my feelings on Ben Stokes. He's a wonderful human being, fantastic cricketer, and as a man, even I hold him in even higher regard. And when England made him captain, they didn't have anybody else, but he was the right choice. But I think the ECB, people inside the towers, probably were making that decision off the back with the thought of this could be interesting. It could be Ben might not always play and toe the party line of what the ECB want. And he certainly hasn't done that, and I don't think he will. And I think when you're talking about him speaking the truth, we didn't hear anything from Ben Stokes for 2 or 3 years because of the stuff that was going on in Bristol. He couldn't really talk. And we missed a lot of some good gold stuff from Ben Stokes because he is forthright with his opinion. And he a lot of the time he just speaks common sense and the truth, which, you know, sometimes people don't like. And I think he's been excellent when he's captaincy. He's been excellent in the media, and he's said things that a lot of people not want to hear from him, but actually what are, you know, proper cricket fans are thinking themselves. The 100 has caused some damage. You know, we've got to protect red ball cricket. We've got to try and make sure that first class cricket doesn't die. You know, we've got to look at the schedule and the calendar. We're all saying that. Everybody's saying that. But when it comes from the England captain's mouth, it becomes even more powerful. And I think that in itself is good for the game. We are going to get change, undoubtedly. But we've got to be making change for the right reasons in cricketing terms, because that will then reward financially at the back of it. If we start making change for financial reward, then cricket might suffer. And I think that's what Ben's trying to say.
Yeah, it was a concern, wasn't it, when Claire Connor said that unpopular decisions would be made, strongly implying that there would be less red ball cricket, and Ben very strong on his belief that there shouldn't be less red ball cricket, that it should just be properly organised. I like that touch about calling Joe Root when he was appointed as England captain. Joe was one of the first people he called.
Yeah, and look, they probably won't mind me having saying these things in public, but a trade secret of the two of them at the end of the test series in the Caribbean, there was, you know, we had a little drink in the bar in the hotel and somebody was singing Simply the Best on a karaoke and Ben Stokes is standing on a chair pointing at Joe Root. And we are in the position of, and I remember coming away from that, and I remember thinking, if people think, right, Joe Root, the ECB are going to sack Joe Root and give it to Ben Stokes, they've got another thing coming. There's no way he's going to take this job off the back of Joe getting sacked, because that's what everybody was expecting. But when Joe stood down, probably Joe convinced Ben that it was the right thing for Ben to take the job. And these have been good friends. I think we talked about, to mention Bristol a little bit earlier, but through that whole saga, that whole affair, when Ben couldn't speak and he knew one side of the story wasn't the portrayed story that was in the media, the one person that stuck by him through everything and looked after him was the England captain and Joe Root. So on that term, it was time for a little bit of payback, and Ben will always, it'll be, I would imagine, always be internally grateful for Joe. That's why they're really close.
Final thought, if you could roll the clock back, turn the clock back 15 years, I bet you'd have loved to play under Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah, I would. Simply, I would. I just, they played the brand of cricket that I love playing. I didn't fit into the Andrew Strauss way. Me and Paul Collingwood fell out and didn't speak for a long period of time because we had different opinion of the way the game was played. They liked somebody that bowled at 83, 84 mile an hour in and around off stump with a ring field, two slips, one gully, third man. And we'll sort of nutritional cricket that's going to blast them out. I've got no idea where this is going, so I'm going to bowl as fast as I possibly can. I want three or four slips, short leg, and if I go six and over, I go six and over. But I'm going to try and get you wickets. And if I get four or five, then great, I've gone. And yeah, that's the way I looked at the game of cricket. 15 years later, Ben and Brendan come along and I'm watching this and I'm going, I'd have loved to play it in this. I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, I wonder what fields I would have. I'd love to know what fields Ben Stokes would set for me that I didn't really know where it was going, but it was going at 90 mile an hour and it was going down fast. It is, honestly, some of it has been breathtaking, but it's been exciting. I'm not saying he's got to rein it in, but I think once he's digested what he's had over the first sort of four test matches, I think there will be little things that he will pick up on just to make him a better captain and a better leader with the team trying to get better. But it's been a great roller coaster and one I think will continue through South Africa.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Still to come in part three, we'll hear exclusively from England's World Cup winning captain Owen Morgan. But next up, we'll discuss Richard Thompson's appointment as the new ECB chair and what that means for the game in this country.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the one and only Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available, as always, via the free TalkSport app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm delighted to say, as promised, we're joined by the editor of the Cricketer magazine, Hugh Turbeville, to talk about the appointment of Richard Thompson as the new ECB chair. I have to say, the first point to make is that it has been very, very well received, to wide acclaim, and that in itself is a rare thing. I can't remember a more popular appointment of an administrator in the England game. Hugh, please explain, if you can, what is it that that people are expecting from Richard Thompson?
Business acumen. He's and also a man absolutely steeped in the game at all levels. I mean, funnily enough, I live in Carshalton, and he used to run Carshalton Cricket Club and oversaw a merger with Croydon Gas and then went off to Oxshott Cricket Club. So he's a player. He's played the game. He left school at 16, and by 30, he'd sort of made his fortune. He's worked in media. He runs M&C Saatchi Merlin. So he's got an independent business background, a little bit like Lord McLaurin did with Vodafone. So it's kind of that sort of similar appointment. And then he's gone to Surrey and overseen an incredibly impressive sort of decade where they've just gone from strength to strength, albeit the COVID was a hampered them because of their corporate activities. But we all know that Surrey are the financial juggernaut of the county game. And yeah, steeped in cricket, business, background in, you know, running a county cricket club, not bringing the politics into it yet, but that is a very good CV, isn't it? An impressive CV.
Yeah, he is. I think he's a good man, and he not only is he a very, very good businessman, he's a nice man to boot, but will he have ever walked into an organisation like the ECB? Because 350 employees, you know, they say they're hard up when it comes to cash. You've got four competitions that no idea what the scheduling is going to look like in however many months, years time. This is a tough job for Richard Thompson.
Incredibly tough. This is a it's a quagmire, isn't it? I mean 4-3 doesn't go well. That was the view of our cover of our Cricketer magazine a few months ago. I don't know whether you agree with it or not, but you know, there's probably one competition too many. Some say get rid of the Blast, some say get rid of the 100. We know that Richard Thompson was against the 100. We know that Surrey didn't need the 100, didn't want the 100. You know, they fill their seven home Blast games easily, 20,000 plus crowds. They make a lot of money from it. It wasn't aimed at Surrey, the 100, was it? If you accept that there were valid reasons for the 100, then Surrey didn't need it. And it came by surprise for them. Look, I don't honestly think that some people at the ECB wanted Richard Thompson to be chairman, did they? I mean, because he's been outspoken about that tournament, and that tournament is very close to some people's hearts there. But apparently this is, you know, the counties wanted, the counties insisted upon this for the reasons we've outlined, but that they feel that their interests have not been represented of late because of the creation of an independent board, and a board actually that Richard Thompson walked away from in, I think, 2017. Him and Andy Nash of Somerset were in despair, really, at the lack of influence of the counties, walked away, and the 10-person board lacks cricket acumen. I mean, Tom Harrison's gone now, the chief exec, and he played for Derbyshire. He had a bit of cricket acumen, but really there isn't that much there. So he's got a hell of a job on, but he's also, it's very tricky for him now because they've preempted his appointment by announcing this new TV contract with Sky until 2028, and that appears to have guaranteed the future of the 100. So does he accept that that's going to be around for 5 or 6 years? Does he accept that there's going to be no test cricket on terrestrial? That's probably me being delusional, I know, because I'm probably barking up the wrong tree with that one. It's just a pipe dream of mine. But it almost appears like he's sort of got to, if he really is adamant that he wants to change things in the short term, and he's only got on a 5-year contract, he's going to have to unpick all this contractual stuff. It's, frankly, they've left him with a bit of a minefield, haven't they?
We've got Ben Stokes telling hard truths as England captain, more so than pretty much any of his predecessors. He's speaking the truth. Richard Thompson, it would appear, is another man who calls a spade and speaks the truth. Can English cricket cope? I mean, is there anything Richard Thompson can do about the 16.4? I mean, it's there and it's set in stone, isn't it, for the next, well, as you said, till 2028?
I'm sure. I think he can get rid of it if he wants to. It's a question of whether he does. I mean, we know he didn't like it in the past, but that was with his Surrey hat on. Apparently, he sort of said that he sees the merits of it now. Well, I mean, I don't know. But I mean, I would have thought, being honest, that to get this job, you'd have had to sort of pretend to like it a bit, if I'm honest. Look, I know there are people who do like it. I've had a real ear battering from people saying that I'm preaching to Generation Y, telling them what they should like, etc. There are case studies out there of people who like this tournament. My son is going to a game. I'm not going to change the locks on the door when he's out. my colleague, Jim Hineson, who played for Nottinghamshire, has to accept that he, now when he plays cricket on the beach with his son, he has to be Trent Rockets. Kids like it, but it just seems incredibly divided, the world of cricket. Okay, it's called an echo chamber. People on Twitter, you know, there's a post goes up and there are 100 negative posts about the 100 underneath it. Is it an echo chamber? Where does the divide go? Is it 52-48 like Brexit? Is it, how can we sort this out? I don't know. I really don't know. But it just, I think if Richard Thompson wants to get rid of it, I'm sure he'll be diplomatic. He'll say, thank you very much for the 100 for bringing in new followers. I think it's time now to concentrate once again on the 18 counties. I think he could probably do it with the help of an able chief executive like Richard Gould, who was his chief exec at Surrey. He's now gone off to be Bristol City chief exec, or somebody like Johnny Graves, who cut his business teeth at the Oval and is now chief exec of the West Indies Cricket Board.
Yeah, I mean, coming on to the chief exec, is it as simple as Richard Thompson tries to sort of get his man in? I can throw another name in it and Durham fans won't like it. Tim Bostock, he's done wonders with rebuilding my cricket club to a tower of strength now. I wouldn't like to see Tim go, but I think for the best of English cricket, it wouldn't be a bad appointment. How easy would it be to get Richard Thompson's man in? Because surely he is the chair. He needs somebody that he can work with to sort of drive the message for him.
Well, I think he definitely will want, in his heart, he probably want Richard Gould because they worked so well together for 7 years at the Oval. Whether Richard Gould wants to move back from Bristol or not, I don't know. Yeah, Tim Bostock's done a great job at Durham, hasn't he? Daniel Gidney at Lancashire got many admirers, hasn't he? I'm sure they'll find someone, but it depends what Richard Thompson wants, doesn't it? He's kept his cards close to his chest of late. He would have had to said certain things, I think, to persuade the board of directors to accept him as the person, and we're going to have to see, aren't we? It's going to be absolutely fascinating.
What's the first thing in their intro? What do they have to do first of all to get a positive message forward? Because at the minute, there's too many negative things going on around the ECB, whether it be the 100, the format, the way the games are, the scheduling, international scheduling. It seems as though every time the sort of ECB is mentioned, it's in a negative manner. How do they go about making it positive?
Yeah, we had a themed issue a few issues ago. Is the ECB still fit for purpose? I suggested with a change of leadership, perhaps it will. But there's mutterings that the government are not happy with it. They're not comfortable with the ECB as the governors of the English game. And the racism thing is obviously massive. Tom Harrison, it was said that he reacted too slowly about the Yorkshire scandal. They said that, you know, they had faith in Yorkshire to resolve the issue themselves and they didn't want to intervene, but it took 2 years really. And I think eventually they still had to intervene and it ended up in front of the Select Committee in the House of Commons. So we've seen racism scandals at Yorkshire. We've seen now in Scotland, there've been incidents at Essex. So that absolutely is something that, has to be dealt with swiftly, and people from all faiths and backgrounds need to feel comfortable with the game's administrators. The South Asian plan was introduced in 2018, and it's the reality, it's the future, and anybody who stands in the way of that needs to leave the stage now. Yeah, scheduling, as you say, the finances of the ECB are looking a little bit better at the moment. We had something in the magazine, but it's they've bounced back surprisingly well after COVID. They'll have to resolve if they do carry on with the 100, whether they keep giving each county 1.3 million a year, which is a lot of money, 24 million a year, counties, many of the counties are reliant upon that, but apparently that's not stipulated in yet in the new TV contract with Sky. So, governance, finance, racism, there's a huge amount in his intro, isn't there?
There certainly is. Hugh Turbeville, we'll keep a very, very close eye and we'll be reading your thoughts. Do enjoy your editorials. So keep up the good work and many, many thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, guys.
It was Hugh Turbeville, editor of the Cricketer magazine. And just quickly to finish this section, Harmy, England amazingly, amazing to me, I can't believe they missed out on a medal at the Commonwealth Games. Extraordinary, losing to both India and New Zealand in consecutive days. That was a real shock. And before we get your thoughts on that, Nat Sibber was asked about the possibility of cricket being included in the Olympic Games.
The experience at the Commonwealth Games for us has been amazing. I think cricket has really taken off a little bit in the Commonwealth Games, and I think with the number of crowds that we've had and the noise that they've been making, and it's just a bit of excitement around it. I mean, it's a brilliant sport, so it's brilliant for people to come and watch, and hopefully it can be included again.
And is it another one of the steps, if you like, up the staircase for women's sport, and particularly for you guys?
Yeah, I hope so. I guess it's already been a massive summer for women's sport, and hopefully it can continue on throughout this summer. But it's never really been a better time to be playing women's sport. I think I sort of say it every year, gosh, it's like... Could this be the moment? But you never really know until you've looked back, really. But yeah, this is special for women's sport.
And what would you say to the International Olympic Committee looking at cricket for LA?
I'd love to go to LA. I feel like it's been a success here. So hopefully they think about it for the Olympics.
That was Nat Sibber talking about the possibility of cricket being included in the Olympic Games. There has only been one occasion when men's cricket was played at the Commonwealth Games. That was back in 1998. Your thoughts on cricket being part of Commonwealths and Olympics?
Yeah, I think it'd be great to push the game globally. What are the player, T20? Are they player the 16.4? I don't know. I think T20, by 2020, I would imagine the 16.4 will be put fairly well and truly back in its box. So I think we'd be going down the 2020 route. I'd love to see it. Can you imagine? You know, commentating on the Olympics in Los Angeles in 2028. But onto England and what Nat was saying, yeah. I think it would be great to have them. I think they were unfortunate in this tournament just because we've seen in the men's game how important a leader is. And nothing against Joss, but when you lose Owen Morgan like England did, it has a knock-on effect. And I think the Heather Knight injury, I think that probably cost England a medal because of her leadership qualities, not just with performance, but actually in and around the group as well. So, you know, it is unfortunate they missed out on the bronze medal or any sort of medal, but I think it's been good for the women's game, having cricket in the Commonwealth Games.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and the former number one bowler in the world, Steve Harmison. As promised, it's time now to hear from England's World Cup winning captain, Owen Morgan, who's been speaking to TalkSport's Sam Allard as part of the Everyone In campaign with KP Snacks, the official team partner of the 100.
Unfortunately, I'm not missing it at all. I'm really enjoying sitting back, doing some commentary with Sky, and... You know, I have a massive interest in the game. I care about how the guys are doing. I want them to do well. I want them to go on and win World Cups. So I've enjoyed stepping back and supposed to be entertained. We've got some of the best players in the world. They've played two really strong teams in South Africa and India that have been tough challenges. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing going into a World Cup away from home. You know, normally if there was a home World Cup, you want to get better at being out of your comfort zone at home or away, but given the limited chances that England have to play both in Pakistan and three match series against Australia pre-World Cup, I think it's a good thing. It makes any team, when they lose, ask sensible questions about where they're going and what they're doing.
I can see why you're doing well on Sky, by the way. What an answer that was, by the way. You're off to an absolute flyer, aren't you, Owen?
No.
You've become the world's busiest pundit. You're almost as busy as Ali McCoist is on TalkSport.
No, I'd never be as busy as Ali. I haven't got quite to the level where you can integrate majority of the football around the year, all of the racing during our summer and winter around your job. So I actually need to speak to him, actually.
Really?
Yeah, maybe Big Al has something for us as well. He seems to do all right for himself. He adds in the cricket down in Australia as well. I mean, well, how do you do that?
You do know he went to Australia. We did the breakfast show from there. Yeah. He didn't actually go to any of the cricket.
Yeah, he sat in the pub, didn't he? That's how good is that? That's unbelievable. Yeah, so I've not got to that level. I'll tell you, I'll aspire. Yeah. I'm playing a lot of golf. I'm loving watching the cricket. Now I'll continue to dream.
You're made for TalkSport, by the way. You like golf, you've just come out of the game, and you like drinking as well. You're made for a breakfast show with Brazil and McCoys.
I wouldn't say I'm made. You know, I used to be sponsored by a rum company, Captain Morgan's, and it was very, very appropriate at the time. But now all drinking in moderation, as everybody knows.
Adam Brazil and Adam McCoys don't do that. Oh, they really? Don't do moderation, they just drink.
That's why I work with Sky then, isn't it?
There was so much talk last year about the 100. Is it going to work? Do we need it in the game? Going into the second year, when you look back on the first year of it, how do you think it kind of went down? Do you think it sort of brought in that new younger audience that maybe it's has been created to do?
Yeah, it was an extraordinary success. I mean, it blew everybody's mind. I knew it was going to be good from the from its infancy of an idea, just because we miss an iconic international tournament that makes domestic players household names up and down the country, and the power of the 100 can do that, and it should do that. It should provide a platform that catapults somebody into the England team, potentially for the World Cup this year or next year in India, the 50 over World Cup. So I was delighted. I mean, it's easy to overlook the ultimate success that it brought, which was growth in the game. And the growth in the women's game was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. The girls put on a real show. The skill level was through the roof. Mm. The attendances were through the roof. And it was brilliant, you know, having double headers on the same day. The men would turn up early. You know, we're all one team. We'd turn up early, watch the girls, give it their everything, and then they'd stay behind and watch us play. So there's a real collective within the tournament. There's a sense of unity going forward. Obviously, the girls are a delayed start this year with Commonwealth Games going on. So, but I still think it's going to be a raving success. It's got some of the best players in the world playing for a short period of time. It's fully entertaining. So I'm looking forward to it.
And just if I can, one more question on England. Jason Roy is not in the best of form. You know him better than most. Is he a streaky player, though? We've seen him, haven't we, under your captaincy. He goes through, you're nodding on, he goes through big patches or bad form, but then all of a sudden plays himself back into form. So there's been some talk he could lose his place in the team. Would you like to see him carry on in the team, or do you think maybe a change is needed?
No, here I think anybody that's tracked Jason Roy's career from the very beginning, he's a guy who comes in and looks to dominate, and not just dominate any attack, but some of the best attacks in the world. And in doing that, you need to take on a huge element of risk. And he does that at a sacrifice to his wicket a lot of the time. Sure. And it's so powerful when he goes out and plays in that way. The message it sends to the change room, the message it sends to the opposition, that, you know, when he's not doing well, England miss it. To the extent where during the World Cup in 2019, where he got injured down at Southampton, he pulled his hamstring, he was out for a couple of games, we drastically missed him. And the first game he came back, went out with Johnny Bairstow, belted India all around Edgbaston, and everybody has obviously a sense of relief. And that's a true sign of leadership. You know, great leaders allow people time to breathe and just to have an extra bit of growth around the side. And Jason Roy is one of those guys at the moment. I think given the timescale between now and the World Cup, he has numerous opportunities in the 100, tour to Pakistan, 3 games against Australia, 2 more warm-up games before he gets to Australia. So actually, it's not that bad a thing that he's out of form now. He has plenty of time to get back in form.
Former England captain Owen Morgan speaking with TalkSport's Sam Allard as part of the Everyone In campaign with KP Snacks, official team partner of the 100. Interesting, Harmy, that as much as Ben Stokes has been talking about the importance of not reducing the red ball schedule and playing more red ball cricket and focusing on the test team, at a similar time, Mo and Ali was, and not just Mo, a couple of players have been talking up white ball cricket and saying that that's where the focus should be, or at least implying that.
Yeah, I think Moen's more having a go at the scheduling, as well as obviously the more white ball tournaments that are turning up and they're being allowed to play. I think 12 games in 25 days. In international cricket, for me, that's not good enough. It's just simply not good enough. We at the elite level, top level, to give players a chance to recover, prepare, and then go again to really entertain crowds, then I think the scheduling needs to be looked at from an international point of view. You know, if you're playing domestic cricket, the next level down, you can play games in a short space of time. Not ideally for bodies, but there's a few people with different hats on at this in time. And I think largely down to what we're trying to cram in after COVID, something's got to give. I don't think Ben Stokes will get his way, because I think cricket will be reduced when it comes to the red ball game. I'd actually like to see the games be reduced in numbers from the amount of games played. But I'd like to see first-class cricket be 5 days and not 4 days, because you're not getting result pitches because of groundsmen preparing. We've seen some green pitches recently. If you've got a five-day pitch, you can prepare the best pitch possible, and the pitch will naturally deteriorate like a test match. And you will then bring spinners into play as the game goes on. I would like to see 10 first-class games per season, but have 10 five-day first-class matches to mirror the test match arena.
And anybody missed it, this is what Moeen Ali was quoted as saying, speaking to ESPN Crick Info, talking about the schedule. It's all over the place at the minute. At the moment, it's not sustainable, in my opinion. Something has to be done, because I fear losing the 50-over format in a couple of years, because it's almost like the long, boring one, if that makes sense. It's almost like you've got T20s, you've got test matches, which are great, and then the 50-overs is just in the middle. There's no importance given to it at the moment. I think there's too much. Personally, I feel like there's too much going on. It's great in a way, because there's always cricket being played, but it should never come in the way of international cricket, in my opinion. Yeah, it's good luck to Richard Thompson. So I can say. He's got a lot to sort out.
And the chief executive.
Yes, well, exactly. I've
got to be on it. And this is where the frustration comes in. I look at a name you mentioned, Johnny Graves. Johnny Graves he's done wonders for West Indies cricket, or some people will say. And he's got about 50 employees. He's got to come in. If he comes into ECB, he's got 350 employees. He's got to be scratching his head going, what on earth do you do? Okay. How do you employ these amount of people? And we have a scheduling like this, and we're in a mess with the amount of minds that are great minds we should have that put the game in. Oh, I'm off again.
Harmy, I just want to ask you about the International League T20, the ILT20. That's the new league starting in the UAE in January, February, at the same time as the South African new T20 league. So they run concurrently. There are six franchises in both leagues. The UAE league is set at the moment to have 12 overseas players, 4 Emiratis and 2 from associate nation. So that, you know, that's 72 overseas players. The South African franchises we're going to have 4 overseas players, but because it's owned now by, they're all owned by IPL teams, they've decided that they want 10 out of 17. So that's 72 overseas players in the UAE and 60 in South Africa. Where are they going to get them? And we're talking lots of money. There's all, you know, we read about salary caps and player budgets. Well, I mean, that's just talk, because, you know, They offered David Warner $500,000, where are they going to come from? The game's just tearing itself to pieces.
It is. It's tearing itself to pieces from all different directions. I played second team cricket for Bedleton last week because they were really, really short, and I think if one of these UAE teams has got a shirt big enough to fit me, I might put my boots back on. I don't know where they're going to get them from. I really don't. How on earth can you have that many overseas? We are going to see some absolute Tom Noddies getting games of cricket in the UAE or in South Africa. I can't imagine it being in South Africa. I think the best will go to South Africa, because I think we'll see that as more sustainable long term. And I think the ones that go to the UAE might sort of burn their bridges with... I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud here on this one, but there's a lot of boards not prepared to give NOCs for. I think Sri Lanka and Pakistan are turning NOCs down for some franchises, some franchise tournaments now. But again, the one with the most money would win, because players now are gun for hire. And what we're seeing is, or what we're hearing is, if David Warner does get that reported $500,000, Cricket Australia might be in a bit of trouble because he'd be turning his back on a big bash.
You know what? I think the irony for me is that so the South African League is being run by the franchises and for their benefit. It's not being run for the good of South African cricket. There's no philanthropy about this, you know. It's about the Rajasthan Royals and the Chennai Super Kings and the Mumbai Indians. That's what it's about. And so there are six franchises, which means there are only places for 10 South Africans in the 17-man squad. By the time you put the nationally contracted players in there and other big-name South Africans who aren't nationally contracted, like Faf du Plessis, you're basically going to be down to about 40. There'll be 40 young South African cricketers, and that's it. And there's 130 professionals in South Africa. So, you know, what are they going to do when they don't get a franchise gig in their own country? They'll go to the UAE.
Absolutely. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Because, again, the fee's there. And it might be a touchy subject, this one, Manners, and you know, I'll throw you a curveball here. But of all that, and we know what's happened with South African cricket over years, you know, England have benefited from it. Kevin came over. The quota systems that are in South African sport, where does that stand up? Does that stand up?
Well, it's the franchises have said no. It's
money
their
talks.
League. It's their league. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have said, "I'm sorry, we've bought this franchise, we've paid $5 or $10 million for it, and we want to win, and we'll pick the players we want to pick." So that's the reality of it. Cricket South Africa might theoretically own 57% of the league, but they're not running it. They're not going to have much of a say. So finally, we're running out of time. I just want to mention that Kyle Abbott signed a new 2-year deal with Hampshire, and he's still producing the goods. And he's one Kolpak player who's not going to come back to South Africa. So any performances that stand out for you in the Royal London Cup?
I think Ollie Robinson, double 100 in the Royal London, excellent. Young Jones at Durham got 100 yesterday, over the weekend against a good Middlesex side. So, yeah, there's been some good young players who are getting a chance in the Royal London. So, you know, good on them for sticking their hand up and putting some performances together. But like I said, the 100 is what it is, and it's entertaining. But I just can't look by the collateral damage it's doing to our game, and that will always be my opinion on it. I'm not anti 100 as a concept, but I'm anti 100 because of the damage that it's doing to the rest of the game in this country.
And no international cricket scheduled next year, and possibly for the foreseeable future during school holidays. I just find that
crazy.
That's the most damaging thing for me.
Oh, mate, don't get me started. I've got a bored 14-year-old who I'd take down to sort of Durham every now and again, and you know, watching international cricket on it. That was the summer holidays for me. Getting your scorebook out and sitting there listening to the likes of, you know, Jeffrey and Tony Lewis and Tony Gregg on when it was on terrestrial TV, and scoring for the afternoon when bowlers bowled from one end. I think you were still a young man then, back then, Manon. But that was the school holidays. You'd sit there for 4 or 5 hours just learning how to score off the back, off the telly, bowling from one end. And now, my 14-year-old's not going to watch international cricket in the sort of first half of August in the middle of the school holidays. That's sad. Really is.
Indeed. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And if you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at the same time next week to look ahead to the first test between England and South Africa, which gets underway at Lord's on Wednesday. But for now, this has been The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.